Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Ows, and joining me on the bullpen phone, my pal Chris Zook.
Hello, Michael.
So we are recording this, of course, Thursday night, airs on Friday mornings, and just announced that Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry passed away. He probably best known for playing for the Giants, but over the course of his career, played for 8 teams, became a bit of a journeyman in his later years.
He did. He also won 2 Cy Young Awards.
He was the first to win one in both leagues.
I did not know that, right? Like, I was reading a little bit of, ESPN had a story on it tonight when we're doing the show here. Yeah, I did not know that at all. How about this also from the article? So you won 314 games, 311 ERA, 3,534 strikeouts. The only pitchers in history who can match all 3 of those numbers, Walter Johnson, Tom Seaver, and Gaylord Perry. And on top of it, it took him 3 attempts to get in the Hall of Fame. Now, yeah, that right? might have to do about maybe about the spitball, that he kind of, you know, it was in an era there was a lot of dominant pitchers, right? So, I mean, the numbers now, like they had another number, which was pretty amazing, is that he threw 5,350 and a third inning, 6 most all time, only 36 fewer than Nolan Ryan. And then it said for a 9-year stretch, Perry threw at least 300 innings in a season, 7 times in an 8-year span. I mean, he threw for a 10-year period, he averaged over 300 innings pitched per season. He threw 53 shutouts, tied for 16th most, and his 1.181 WHIP is also top 20 all time, ahead of, they just said, Bob Gibson. We don't talk about Gaylord Perry in that same pantheon of all time pitchers, but when you kind of hear some of these stats,
and when you think of like the aggregate of all of it, right? Like, yeah. So like the first one to get Cy Young in both leagues, so 72 for Cleveland and 78 with San Diego, like that is so seldom been done, right? To switch leagues and win the Cy Young in both, to have, you know, an all-time WHIP, to have like almost as
you want 300 plus games, Ryan,
to win 300 plus games, like 3,500 strikeouts, like when you add all of that up, it's, I mean, yeah, I guess it had to have been the spitball. Like, was he like cantankerous with the media at all? Right. Cause I mean, of course this is the Baseball Writers Association.
Yeah,
so like whether they had it out for him at all.
Right. Like what I remember, and this is, you know, I'll be honest. Gaylord Perry was, first of all, his name is, you know, it's an interesting name. Right. But he was never the most flamboyant. He was, yeah, he just kind of did his job a bit. Yeah, I think the spitball was that he might have been cantankerous a bit. I mean, I sent a clip about he was on Letterman, David Letterman's show, early, like late in his career, early in David Letterman's career, and basically just, you know, he seemed, you know, not too bad, but a bit of a gruff man. I mean, he pitched to, which again is, you know, bonkers, but he started at 22 with San Francisco Giants. He finished in 44 with Seattle and Kansas City Royals in 83. So, I mean, he spanned, you know, a couple decades of, you know, dominance, right? Where, you know, way different than what no one's hitting 300 innings, right? Now, let alone averaging in a 10-year span, right? Like, it's just such a different, landscape now of you know what starting pitching does.
Yeah, but like 200 innings is like a phenomenal thing,
right? Too, like, and just the strikeouts and the wins and the Cy Youngs, like, so it wasn't like, you know, you don't luck into these things at a certain point in 22 years, right? Somewhere in there you've done well in both leagues to win a Cy Young. But yeah, I guess there was probably a combination of maybe because, you know, he had the reputation of the spitball and he maybe was a little bit cantankerous a bit. But yeah, those numbers, when you read back kind of his bio here and sort of his obituary now, as you know, as people are celebrating his life, is it's pretty impressive, right? Like, we're talking top 20 like of all time in a lot of categories, and that's just not longevity, it's also just about, you know, his quality of his career.
So I don't know if you saw you obviously mentioned watching a clip from Letterman. Did you see the reprint of a piece that appeared from 2019 about the moon landing and Gaylord Perry?
This is a great story, please. Yes, I've heard this story.
So it was originally published to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, but they reprinted it on MLB.com. This is Chris Haft who wrote the story that, you know, of course, July 20th, 1969, most Americans were consumed by the event of a lifetime, the Apollo 11 lunar landing. So it talks about how the groundskeeper for San Francisco at the time had a area under the right field grandstand at Old Candlestick Park where he plugged in a black and white television set. But it was like kind of close enough to the bullpen where the relievers could kind of keep an eye on both the game and the moon landing. And all of a sudden Schwab hears like crazy amounts of clapping in the stand. And they think like, oh, is this like, have they mentioned something about the moon landing? Like, is this, you know, is this like something that they've put on the PA? But it turns out at the same time that the lunar module was landing, Gaylord Perry hit his first home run. I mean, this is, you know, of course, a pitcher. Right. This is after 500 plus plate appearances as a pitcher. And what was crazy about this was that his manager, Alvin Dark, who, you know, took a look at his swing and was just like so dismissive of like this, the way that he snapped his arms and like just basically was like, this is a flawed swing. And so yeah, he declared that a man would land on the moon before Perry could hit a home run.
Right. It's amazing because it's also in the ESPN article. I mean, it must be, you know, it's part of his folklore, but yeah, because Alvin Dark says, mark my words, there'll be a man land on the moon before Gaylord Perry hits a home run.
And so then what happens? The like Apollo module is landing on the moon at the time of his first home run.
And 30 minutes later, it says he hits his first home run in Candlestick Park. And it's, yeah, you can't make up this stuff. It's just beautiful. They also, in the ESPN article, they're talking about that, I guess he was sort of a he had a basketball football career in high school, so I guess he was, you know, talented, you know, multifaceted athlete, and so, but he didn't do well hitting, right? Most pitchers aren't. His career average 131 with six home runs.
So he did it five more.
Yeah, yeah. Remember, because now pitchers don't hit, right? So we're talking about there's a reason why we've probably gotten to the universe,
the designated hitter in both leagues.
Just a phenomenal story. You will not and to literally, it seems like Gaylord Perry waited until the man on the moon before he hit his first home run.
It is kind of incredible. Like, it seems apocryphal that, like, but Alvin Dark was quoted as saying this, like, there was like proof that he'd
it wasn't just before. Like hearsay, like
years
it,
before it was,
yeah, like it's 5 years before. It's 5 years. 64 is when they said he came out with it. So it's like you also got to think, so he's playing 5 years of baseball while they're trying to get to the, like, it's,
yeah, like
you can't,
because this is a would have been around the time Kennedy would have announced that he wanted to put a man on the moon, right? Like, yeah. Oh my god, that's such an incredible story. Like, and this baseball's full of these kinds of crazy stories.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, back then when there was just so much, I mean, because it was a bit more of kind of the pastime of, you know, the national pastime, let's say in America. But you get, especially, you know, and he had a 22 year career. So there's just a lot of these stories, but that's probably one of the best ones of Gaylord Perry. And probably one of the last, like, I guess, I mean, we don't know, maybe there is still some people doing spitballs, but what we don't know, I thought it was crazy, because he thought people said, you know, he was more than the spitball, except that his 74 autobiography is titled Me and the Spitter. So you know, I think he kind of embraced that, as
no doubt.
Like, you know, I mean, you know, it is what it is. Like, so in the Letterman interview, he asked at one point, so how did, they give him a glove in the segment he's on the TV show. And he's, oh no, I didn't put on the glove. I didn't put on the hat, because that's where the umpires would look. And he goes, oh, so where'd you put it? And he said, well, I put it all over my face. And he goes, well, they didn't check. And he goes, well, I was quite a sweater. So they really, you know.
mistook the Vaseline for the sweat. Yeah.
You just can't make up this stuff. But yeah, pour one out, and the tip of the hat to Gaylord Perry, and an amazing career about that. So
that's the way at the age of 44. I was going to say, so he was a Hall of Famer. I'm sure you saw that the National Hall of Fame revealed their ballot for 2023 on Monday. A lot of notable first timers, including Carlos Beltran.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. 435 home runs and 312 stolen bases during his career. So, I mean, both pretty high marks. And
you wonder if the Astros.
The controversy around the.
Yeah, his involvement, right? Does that, you know, if you're going to bring up the integrity to, you know, the kind of the steroids era, right? Then where does that fall into, right? Like, how, you know, this is where it gets all in the gray area. Right, mm-hmm. Where you're asking the writers to pick and choose sort of what is who did it and who didn't, right? I mean, you know, David Ortiz was in a report that he, you know, failed a test or something like that, but you know, and there's a couple of Piazza is in there that is kind of known. Or allegedly, I guess, you know, yeah, it's just all the gray areas, right? And so the pretty much all the steroid era players now are into the veterans committee, or the committee that now sort of oversees if they get in on outside of the writers. But do you have the list in front of you by any chance, Michael?
Yeah. So the first timers, you've got Francisco Rodriguez, aka K-Rod. The closer
had amazing couple, like, you know, like his peak was amazing, but
yeah, I don't think 37 career saves though. No. Wow. I didn't realize it was quite that high, but I mean,
that's a fast if you do about 50 and 50 a couple years, right? Because he had, I think he still has the record for, I'm not mistaken, 57, 50, no, maybe, I don't know if Eric Gagne got it, but
Gagne might have eclipsed him the one.
Yeah, I mean, he had, I think, a couple into the 50s or high 40s. So, I mean, you can get, you can get to 100 real quick and plus, right? But I mean, 400, the problem is with closers is they just all, they're like kickers, right? In football, they just don't get the respect, right? Like, it's a high bar. Let's just say that, right? If you're not Mariano Rivera or Hoffman, you know, you don't really stand. I mean, how long did it take Lee Smith to get in, right? Like, yeah. Or Goose Gossage.
Or like Billy Wagner has languished. Yeah, no, exactly.
I mean, Eckersley, you know, Smoltz, they had to sort of be a starter and a relief to kind of get in, right? Like, it's just,
right.
To be a pure relief pitcher, the bar is quite high to get there, right? And so, yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, I would not say a Hall of Famer, but that number surprised me a bit on the saves for career.
Yeah, so the other first timers, I would say, are even longer long shots. So we got Houston Street, Matt Cain, John Lackey, R.A. Dickey, Jared Weaver, Bronson Arroyo, Jacoby Ellsbury, Andre Ethier, Mike Napoli, Johnny Peralta, J.J. Hardy, and Jason Worth. So those are all the first timers.
Mind you, R.A. Dickey, I always bring a smile to my face because, you know, he had that amazing year with the Mets there. He won the Cy Young with the Mets, am I not mistaken about that? But then he did come to the Jays, and he sort of had, I remember he signed this big contract, and then it kind of, you know, the knuckler can only go so far, right?
Yeah, they got one solid season.
One good year. That's right. I mean, so, you know, whatever. Yeah. And so then does this open it up to the players that are still left on the ballot that have a chance? Is that correct?
Yeah. So last year, three candidates received more than 50% of the vote, and they need 75. So you had Scott Rolen at 63.2, Todd Helton at 52, and Billy Wagner at 51.
Right.
So Roland is on his sixth year, and Helton and Wagner, Helton's on his fifth, Wagner's on his eighth. So in terms of like it being a relatively weak crop of newcomers, it might help those three.
Could they, right. So Roland probably has the best chance just because he had the highest, obviously, percentage. That didn't get in last year. And is this his last year? Is that what you said?
No. So Roland, this is his sixth year.
Okay.
So he's got four more. Helton's halfway there. Wagner's getting down to the wire.
What about Andrew Jones? I'm just looking at the list from last year. Andrew Jones, Gary Sheffield. Does it list sort of what years they were coming up on by any chance?
Jones, let me see here,
because there's there's like A-Rod, Jeff Kent, Manny Ramirez.
So Jeff Kent is on it. He's on his last year.
Yeah, so he was in the 30s last year. Was so that's
32.7%. He's the only one on his last year. Gary Sheffield is on his ninth year, and yeah, he had 40.6. So these guys are.
So, I mean, the interesting thing, you're right, like, because Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, and Sosa all went off of the ballot from last year. So somewhere those votes now can go to players where you're right. There's not I don't think there's a first ballot Hall of Famer that you mentioned there is first time on the ballot. So, I mean, is there a chance? I mean, is Scott Rolen a Hall of Famer? I guess. I don't know. Like, that's interesting, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, Helton, that's a question mark.
I've always thought the case for Helton was pretty solid.
Helton?
I thought he gets dinged.
Yeah, because of
Colorado, like the humidor. But, like, his offensive stats outside of Colorado were still very great, too, right? Like, he was a hitter no matter where he played.
Oh, I would definitely agree that. I mean, even you could sort of make a case for Andrew Jones and Gary Sheffield. I mean, in their days, they were, you know, they produced. I mean, again, their career maybe wasn't longevity, but their peak was quite good. Yeah, these are interesting because they're sort of, I mean, some people would really champion Jeff Kent back in the day, right? But that would
kind of stalled out, right? Like,
be quite a leap to get 40%. You need almost 43%
Yeah, he right. 30, he had just under 33. So he would need
42%. Yeah. He'd have to get, you know, that's a lot, right? They would have to double plus to kind of go there. I mean, you know, also, you know, still on there is Alex Rodriguez, Manny Ramirez, not going to get Andy Pettit. They will never, like, if Clemens and Bonds and Schilling did not get in, those guys will not get in.
Right? Well, especially because A-Rod and Manny both serve suspensions.
That's right. Yeah. And whereas, so did Pettit PED as well. So all three were actually very similar to, Palmeiro, right? Where they did actually fail a drug test, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no, I mean, the other ones who were allegedly or, you know, whatever, right? But they were the cream of the crop, let's say, of that generation, didn't get in. There's no chance. I don't think any of those will get in. You know, it'll be interesting. I always find it sad if we get to this year again and no one gets in, right? Because mm-hmm. then
you're, we have had that,
Yeah, we have. And because what's going to happen is you're going to get the glut coming up soon, right? I believe Jeter's coming up the next year, if I'm not, like, there's some big names that are going to come up and then they're going to take a lot of the votes
away. Ichiro comes up soon.
Yes, right. And so those are all no doubters, first ballot Hall of Famers. And why am I saying Jeter? No, he's already had it. What am I talking about? So
I was trying to look. I was like, wait, I'm just
totally wrong about it. But you're right, like Ichiro and there's like three, like what I can remember is there's a big a lot of big name players coming up in the
okay. So Beltre. So in 2024, Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, Chase Utley, David Wright, Bartolo Colon, Matt Holliday, Adrian Gonzalez, Jose Bautista, Jose Reyes, they would all be on their first.
Yeah, totally, right? Because those are all, so if you want to get in, this would be the year to try and get in if you could, right? Just to, because a lot of those players are, some of them could be first ballot, but also some of those could be bubbles, right? Where you would put them in. If I think you get up to 10 to vote on, so they would take a lot of those positions, right, on ballots. So, but always those, that's always fun as we get into January and see if anyone makes it to the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah, and then actually, so it's 2025 that Ichiro would be eligible, and that year gets kind of dicey too, because you've also got CC Sabathia, Dustin Pedroia, Felix Hernandez.
Good. I'll say this. I'm going to make the not a hot take, but I would love if Ichiro becomes the second unanimous player in, right? Because to me, if you're looking at just MLB alone, no doubter.
He's a no doubter, but then you take
but this, you add in his what he did in league Japan, stuff,
and it's
and I don't care that it's like it's still like he still hit 3,000 in Major League Baseball, right? He was a MVP rookie of the year his first year in Major League Baseball. He had his career alone in Major League Baseball is, I think, without question, right? Mm-hmm. So interesting, right? Because Mariano has now opened up the door finally to, you know, have a unanimous,
exactly,
right?
I think
it was kind of ridiculous at a certain point that we were having Ken Griffey and, you know,
we've had a few
players who should
like
be
Cal Ripken Jr.
Those not only are first ballot, but they should be the unanimous. But again, if Babe Ruth didn't get in unanimous, I guess that was always the benchmark, was that no one gets in unanimous,
which, right? Like, and always irritated me. It's like, if just because someone screwed up in the past, like, doesn't mean like you should continue screwing up and like as a tradition, like
right, like someone is not going to put on Griffey or Ripken because of what? Because they don't deserve it.
Or no. Pedro, right? Like
Pedro, exactly.
If you watched one of those players and said, like, this isn't a Hall of Famer, like, what?
Why are you?
What were you watching? Yeah,
exactly. What criteria? Other than the only thing I've ever heard is that people are like, well, he's going to get in anyways, and we're just going to give the vote to someone else, but. Unanimous is unanimous, right? And there's only been one player in you know, how many years they've been Hall of Fame, almost 100 years, right? So it kind of, I'm hoping, you know, in a couple of years that East Row becomes the next one, right? Because to me, that's not only a no doubter, but it should be unanimous.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hard agree on that one.
So before we go here, yeah, like the hot stove, is it percolating yet? Because
it's been,
it should start.
There's so the Rays agreed to a 3-year deal with Zach Eflin.
Did you hear this? This I read, and this makes no sense, but they say, yeah, 3 years, $40 million. This is the largest free agent contract in Rays history. How is that possible? We're in 2022 and they're celebrating signing someone for $40 million.
I know, for 3 years for $40 million. Like, so 5 years, 35 by Wilson Alvarez in 97 was the largest guaranteed contract.
Well, and I get it. The
Charlie Morton's 2-year deal at $15 million was the largest annual value given to a free agent. That was 2019, 2020. So this, like, yeah, I mean, it's not surprising because we're like the Rays of this has been like the penny pinching has been their, the way of their franchise for decades. That's but it is
like kind of embarrassing, isn't it? Like,
yeah, when you think
we shouldn't be celebrating that too much, right?
Because I mean, I'm sure they're cashing checks because of like the base, like the rights and the money for the like stats.
That franchise
thing that the MLB owns, like all the
endlessly, all these franchises are worth billions of dollars now, right? Yeah. It doesn't matter what it is. That's the whole. There's only it's a monopoly. There's only so many.
It's not just receipts.
You're buying the whole entity of it. Yeah, they're all billionaires, you know, with these franchises now. So yeah, somehow that they're, you know, penny pinching to get to $40 million. I mean, nothing. I mean, I guess it's a step in the right direction. We always kind of try and champion the players, I think, in this broadcast here, but at least, you know, at least the Rays are sort of at least inching towards, you know, I mean, the irony about that. So we're going to talk about $40 million. What is Judge going to get? $50 million a year? Like, I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
his deal will, like, each annual payment will exceed the like entirety of the Rays deal. Yeah. No. Jeff Passan from ESPN said, I guess that the Yankees offered 8 years and approximately $300 million.
Yeah,
is what I've seen. So I mean, obviously, like, they're still in negotiations. And
so the winter meetings are going to be next week in San Diego is what I'm reading here, right? About the key season date. So that's sort of when we start kind of, you know, everyone's in the same
right now
place.
It's like agents leaking figures and, you know, front offices talking to reporters about like who's on their like wish list. But yeah, it's all.
Yeah, I mean, like today, as we're broadcasting this on December 1st, Shelby Miller to the Dodgers on a 1-year contract. That's not really.
No.
You know, that's not news, right?
Zach Eflin's a good pitcher, but that's not like.
Yeah, I will say that there was two that happened after last week's broadcast is Jose Abreu to the Astros on a 3-year deal. And Carlos Santana went on a 1-year deal to the Pittsburgh, right? So those are kind of sort of.
I mean, Abreu, you know, breaking up the White Sox is a.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was an MVP a couple of years ago, so it's not like he's, you know, and it kind of shores up again the Astros. Yeah, you know, that's a position there, you know, they're looking to upgrade a bit. So, you know, if he can help out a little bit there, I mean, it's defending champions, but those are sort of the, what I was just looking at the list. Other than that, there's a lot of players you wouldn't know much about and you wouldn't really have them in fantasy as well. So like, I think the next couple of weeks, hopefully, you know, the ones of Judge or DeGrom or Turner, Correa, I mean, there's a whole bunch that are out there, right? Bogart, Swanson, Rodon, Yeah. I mean, it's those are the ones that we want to be talking about in a couple of weeks. And then hopefully if you're a Jays fan, that they're in the play for one of these, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. The Teoscar trade, right? They get a pitcher, Swanson back. But I think, you know, if you're a Jays fan, you want them to do something.
You want some more arms. Absolutely.
You want something that you can kind of go, okay, they're ready to make another push next year. Right. And so, yeah.
Especially when you look at like the quality of some of the arms that are out there, like if that's a team need, which I think we would agree is a team need,
yeah,
that there's guys to be had. So.
Oh, totally. And you know what? So we'll see in, you know, the next couple of weeks before we get to the holiday break, you'll see what they do and some other teams, right? It sounds like the Giants are making a big push for Judge. The Yankees are sort of, you know, in the mix too. But like you said, Michael, I think the interesting thing is I think a lot of agents are kind of pulling some strings here on the mm-hmm. on the side, right? About trying to leak here or there to kind of boost their players' value as much as they can before they sign the contracts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that, we'll remind you to tune in to the Pity Party at 1 o'clock, and we'll be back here next Friday. And I mean, no ball. So what are we doing off the season?
I don't even know. I don't know if we ever did anything.
We never came up with something for that. Yeah.
Nothing. I can't say that. So, but I guess we'll just
reiterate. We're pouring one out
for Gaylord Perry. Pour one out to Gaylord Perry.
Strike three, you're out.